What's up, everybody? This is Eric Nam.
And this is Eddie Nam.
And welcome to Commit or Quit. Hope you guys are doing well and you are ready to buckle in for a new episode of Commit or Quit. We have an amazing guest today on the show. But for people who don't know what Commit or Quit is, Eddie, briefly, what is Commit or Quit? What do we do here?
Yeah, we basically watch a movie or a TV show and then we decide on whether to commit to it or quit to it. Because we do realize that even though we are all in quarantine and dealing with this COVID-19 situation, there is a lot of catalog. There are a lot of things that you could be watching, but you don't want to waste your time. So we're doing you guys a favor and we're taking the hit if it's bad. But if it's good, you know, we are helping you guys.
Word. So today we have a legendary movie brought to us by a legendary friend. His name is Ronnie Chang. You guys may know him from The Daily Show. He is a correspondent there. He's also a stand-up comedian. He is an actor. He's been in a bunch of different things, but he's hilarious. And we had a great conversation with him, didn't we?
Yeah. Saying a good conversation is probably an overstatement because, you and Ronnie really you didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. But
honestly, it's more than a good conversation. It was a good fight. This episode, you will hear me really just struggle my way through arguing with a stand-up comedian / guy who went to law school. And essentially being, I would say, kindly bullied into making some decisions. But it makes for a great show. It was a hilarious episode. I haven't laughed this hard in an episode in a while. And so I had a great time. And I think you guys will enjoy it just as much. So, without further ado, here it is. Here's Commit or Quit of My Sassy Girl with today's guest, Ronnie Chang. Hey, what do you want to watch?
I don't know.
Oh, I actually heard this is really good.
What do you say? Should we commit or quit?
What's up, dude? Ronnie, how are you, man?
Hey, man. I'm okay. Thanks for having me on. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thanks for joining us. We're excited to have you. And from what we hear, you are in Sydney, Australia.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct?
Yeah. So this is, you couldn't get three different time zones. We got Los Angeles, we got Sydney, Australia.
I know. The wonders that the internet works. What are you doing out in Sydney? Are you working? Are you just quarantining? What's going on?
I came out here for some work and then the world kind of ended. And so everything got kind of postponed. So I'm just kind of waiting it out here in Australia.
Are you with your wife?
Yeah.
Or are you
she's here. My wife is Australian. Okay. Like I used to live here. I lived here for a long time. So it kind of feels like home. It's pretty comfortable here.
That's cool.
They handled it pretty well. Yeah. Would love to go back to New York, but right now, probably not that feasible. There's no point going
back.
New
York seems to be going through like a really tough spot. So it's for all my friends and family who are just like, we're waiting it out outside of the city. Seems to be a much safer bet.
Yeah. You're in quarantine right now?
I am. I'm in quarantine in Seoul. And I'm almost done. I spent like almost 2 months in LA after the tour was cut short. And then I get to Korea putting together a new album. But in Korea, if you've come from out of the country, you have to do 2 weeks of mandatory quarantine. So
I think Australia is like that too. But even if they test you, they can't test you. And like, if you're clear, they won't let you out. You still got to be 2 weeks.
Yeah. So I got tested as soon as I landed. I got cleared immediately within like 12 hours, but I still can't leave. So.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess that's why they're ahead of the curve.
Yeah. I mean, that's why they have it under control and they've been really good at just tracing people, doing the contact tracing stuff. So it's been good, but a little maddening at times.
It's been interesting to watch Eric day by day just unraveling and going down this downward spiral. Just nobody to talk to but himself. So, we're really excited to have you on today because this is also a bit of a therapy session for Eric.
Yeah, no
Ronnie,
problem, man. I mean, he's already, he's not even showing us his background. So, I don't know what the hell's going on in his apartment.
There's some weird shit going on.
Yeah. 2 weeks in isolation.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But dude, I'm so glad we could connect. You know, it would have been great if we could have connected in person, but at least we get to do it over a Zoom call. Yeah. I guess for people who are listening in, who are watching this on whatever platform, they're kind of wondering how and why is Ronnie here? well, first of all, we got to say that Eddie and I are both really big fans of yours. We've loved your work. I loved your Netflix special. Even in Crazy Rich Asians, I feel like you played such a fun role. And also on The Daily Show, you're the one guy that looks like us that can also say stuff that nobody else can. And so you're a refreshing voice and face to hear and watch all the time.
No, I appreciate it. And on the flips, on the other side, also, like, I love your music, man. I went to your concert in New York, became an instant
fan. Thank you.
It was great. I love it.
I mean, thank you. I mean, I got to ask a question. So, like, for people who don't know, so actually nobody knows this story. I'm sitting backstage after the concert in New York, and I'm kind of exhausted. There's a billion people backstage. I'm just going through my Instagram, and I was like, Ronnie Chang tags me in a story. And I was like, Ronnie Chang was here. And I looked at Eddie, he's like, Ronnie Chang was here. And I was like, where was he? And this is like, the point of view was like on the floor, up, looking up during a song. But how did you end up at one of my shows? I'm just so curious.
What do you mean? Your music's great.
Well, thank you.
My wife put me onto you. She was like, hey, this guy's great. He's performing live in New York. You want to come? And I was like, yeah, sure. I'll come watch this. And so I came to watch it. And I was like, man, you blew it away. The concert, you were singing, dancing, people are throwing stuff at you, underwear. It was just crazy. Yeah. And it kind of reminded me of one of my concerts. I just bought a ticket and went, just because, like, what the hell, right? Like, I personally I don't really know you, so I'm not gonna like ask you for anything. And also, it's like, yeah, just buy a ticket and go. Like, that's what it, you know. Like, I come from live performing, so
yeah.
If people just buy a ticket and come watch, like, that's cool. If there's some, I always appreciate people like reaching out, you know, fellow performers reaching out afterwards.
Yeah.
But we just went to go watch, and I think there's this kind of, kinship between, like, I feel like a lot of musicians I know anyway, they like really like stand-up comedy, and they're kind of like, they, you know, they face live music every day, so they're not that they're sick of it, but like in their spare time, they rather go watch something else rather than watch music some more, because for them it's like a job. And so they kind of gravitate towards stand-up because it's like live performing. And it's the same for stand-ups. Like, in our off time, we'll gravitate towards live music because watching stand-up is, it's fun, but it's also, sometimes it can be work. It feels like work. So you just want
to
go and see something else. And, you know, I learned a lot from your production values. The whole time I'm like putting my producer hat on, like, man, how much does that cost? Like, that LED in the back. Like, is he touring with that? Did he hire that locally? Like, who are these guys? Are these guys local? Do they travel with him? Does that guy, like, I wonder who that dude is. Like,
you know, profession- Eric is underplaying this.
His show, just for background, there's like, he has like backup dancers and all that. So, yeah, sorry.
When we saw that you tagged him on the story, like, you know, we were buzzing about that because I think last week we had watched your stand-up special.
And
the person that recommended me to watch that were my in-laws, and they're white. And so they're it wasn't like a, you're going to like this because he's also Asian, but they're like, yo, this is genuinely funny. And too deep into it, but we were also having a conversation. We're like, yo, we need like some like Eastern Asian bros to just like be genuinely funny and crush it on stage. And when I watched that dude, it touched my heart. The shit was hilarious.
Oh, thanks, man.
So thank you.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
That was awesome.
And also like, watching you perform and like, you know, can't help but think like, you know, I know just a little bit of the background of what you were doing, and like just thinking like, damn, he had to you know, like he had to kind of go to Korea to figure this out and then come back to America, you know. And that's something which like I totally understood that whole thing, yeah. Why that had to happen. And like, I'm glad it happened. And just, you know, just also kind of like a little bit of frustration that it had to happen that way, you know, but that's, you know, that's mm-hmm. the game. So just kind of watching as a live performer, you know, in your own right, and then also the business side of it, and like also you as like an Asian guy performing on stage, you know, all those stuff. So
well thank you. I'm so thankful that you came to the show. I'm so glad that you tagged me on that one story and that we were able to connect, because both Eddie and I were so excited, and we definitely appreciate it. There's like Eddie, I feel like there's a recurring theme with a couple of these new friends that we make, where it's like their wives drag them to a show.
Yeah.
Like Randall Park as well.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you acknowledged it on stage. You're like, how many people here? How many people here because your girlfriend or wife dragged you? And then it was like,
yeah. There's like, yeah, that we're stuck here, but hopefully y'all have a good time. Yeah,
no, but that's what's cool, man. You convert people. You convert people to K-pop. You convert people to you. You know, people come. I mean, that's how it spreads, right? It's word of mouth. It's the strongest marketing. It's word of mouth. Yeah. It's like, just like you and your in-laws. So hey, yo, go see this guy. You know, he's good. And then you go watch it. Oh my god, yeah, it blows your.
Yeah,
words.
Man, and we're super bummed that everything got postponed, because you're supposed to be touring. Like, you're going to come to the Wilton right next to me.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Supposed to be going on a tour. It was selling really well. And then, just had to make the call of like, you know, do you really want to just like push through for this year? And like, who knows what's going to happen with the venues, what the rules are around it. Mm-hmm, I just felt like more time probably helps, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm really curious, you know, for some people may know how you got started, but for those of you for the people who don't, you know, how did you make your way from Asia over to New York on The Daily Show? Now you're doing, you know, a bunch of acting and stuff as well. Like, was this always the goal? Was this always the dream? How did this happen for you, your life and your career? I know that's a huge question, but...
Yeah, it's basically I went to... Australia for law school, and I was growing up in Singapore, and then I went to Australia for law school, and then I just started doing stand-up comedy in Australia, and it was going pretty well here. I was selling tickets. I was kind of getting on TV a little bit. I mean, as much as Australia will let Asian guys on TV, which is not a lot. And then I got hired on The Daily Show, and then I moved over to America in 2015. So I was doing comedy in Australia for about, 6 years. Yeah, I did it for 6 years, then moved to America. Yeah, and then continued doing stand-up there, obviously. And then, that's just how it played out.
You know? For law school, were you in law school during the time that you were doing stand-up? Was it like, do both at the same time, have your insurance kind of thing going?
I guess. I was doing stand-up like straight out of law school. Like I couldn't get a job. Oh, okay. So I finished law school, and I just was doing stand-up comedy as much as I could.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in Australia. Australia has a pretty good stand-up comedy infrastructure. You know, they have they have some really good platforms like the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, and like there's like a lot of touring infrastructure. You know, if you hustle a bit and you know, you work at it, you can kind of do your own venues. You know, like just like music. In fact, a lot of this, the way I was touring was a lot like a indie band. It wasn't so much comedy clubs, because there's only a few comedy clubs. It was more like you get your own venue, you know, you do the marketing, you bring people in, and then every year you try to double your numbers. So that was kind of what was happening in Australia. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. I have this, I guess I'm jealous of comedians in many ways, because you guys are allowed to say shit that I'm not allowed to say. There are so many times where Eddie and I sit there. I'm like, Eddie, can I say this? Like, do not say that. Do not go onto this tangent about something political.
Right. And well, I mean, what's funny is that you could probably doing a song and it would be fine. Like, you could just put, if you put the lyrics,
I could.
You could do it in Korean, it would be fine.
That's what I should do.
Eric, are you trying to say that you want to be a rapper? Is that what you're trying to say?
I mean, there are times I would like to be a rapper and a stand-up comedian, knowing that I'm bad at both. But I'm just incredibly jealous of people who are able to do it. And Eddie's always like, do you want to not make money and be out of a job? And
do you want to lose everything?
Family?
Yeah. Do you want to lose everything? That's the question we have to ask.
All for a joke. And sometimes I'm like, well, if it's the right joke. But this dude's always against it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, grass is always greener, I guess. You know, music, like, you know, musicians. Yeah, I mean, comics wish they could be musicians. And I guess musicians wish they could be comics. And
right.
True.
Yeah.
Wise words. But
yeah, I mean… I don't know enough of a political thing, but you put a lot of humor in between your songs on stage. So I thought that stuff was pretty fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're talking about your mom not wanting, like, telling you to not take off your shirt or something. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yo, Ronnie has impeccable memory right now. He's like able to each of the phases of your set. This is amazing.
What do you mean? It was a very memorable set, man. It was it was amazing. That venue was great as well.
Yeah, Webster.
Yeah,
Hall.
That's a cool venue. It's a really cool venue. Yeah. One last question before we jump into today's commit or quit is, I guess growing up, you know, what were some of the movies, films, TV shows that really influenced you, and were there any stand up comedians or comics or anything that really influenced how you kind of work and create?
I guess like Seinfeld was really cool. I think it kind of put the idea in my head that you could, you know, go on stage and just tell jokes, and you could kind of make observations about everyday life, you know, and make that the joke, not just like street jokes, you know, where it's like, knock knock, who's there or whatever. Like, there's like observational jokes. It kind of right. I guess put me onto that.
That's cool.
I guess I mean, everyone in college, in university, was watching Russell Peters, you know, so there's a lot of that. Yeah. Everybody
Dude,
was like,
wait, time out. What happened to Russell Peters? Where is this guy?
Yeah.
Oh, he's around. Yeah, he's around. He's
is he?
Yeah, he's around. He's in. He's Canadian. He probably lives in LA. Yeah, I mean, he's around. He's touring. Well, you know, he keeps touring worldwide. So I guess he's.
Russell Peters was the one that did like the Indian accent a lot, right?
Yeah.
Got it.
Who else was influencing? I guess like you know, and then as soon as when you start getting onto comedy, you start watching more and more comedians. So like, you know, Bill Burr and Dave Chappelle.
Oh, mm-hmm. Love Bill Burr.
All those guys. Yeah, all those guys kind of like… kind of once you're onto stand-up comedy, you kind of get… You start really exploring it the way you explore music. And you see all these different comics. You know, Todd Barry, all these guys. All these really like New York comic guys. And that's kind of what made me also want to move to New York City. Because all my comedy heroes and all my favorite comedians kind of came from New York. So I was going to move to New York anyway to do comedy.
Oh.
And I was really lucky that I got The Daily Show. Because I look back on it now, like if I had moved to New York without The Daily Show, how naive that would have been. Just going trying to go to New York from scratch, you know, as like this, I don't know, whatever, Malaysian, Australian kid just trying to… tell dick jokes on stage.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Ronnie, what was the defining moment that got you onto The Daily Show? Like, was there a big moment that got you?
I mean,
like that full-time gig?
Yeah, I guess it would have been like… I did a show with Trevor Noah in Montreal. And he really liked my set. And then I kind of know Trevor from the circuit because he was doing the festival circuit a lot, which was kind of like the circuit I was doing, which is like the Melbourne Comedy Festival, Edinburgh, Just for Laughs circuit, basically everywhere outside of America. And he is like one of those guys, like legendary performers, you know, like the month-long Edinburgh Festival. He started in like the smallest venue and then he ends the festival. By the end of the month, he's like in the largest venue in Edinburgh, which is unprecedented. So he was doing like a lot of like, you know, like rookie of the year things when I was coming up as well. And I did a set on a show with him at Just for Laughs and he really liked it, I guess. And then 3 years later, he asked me to, he asked me on The Daily Show. He asked me to audition for it, but essentially... he was kind of pushing me through. And, you know, it was really cool of him to do that because we weren't the best of friends when we met. And I'm sure he had closer friends who are, you know, much funnier. But he just really wanted, like, Asian people represented, you know. So, and he didn't have to do that. You know, he could have easily just whatever, let it slide. But he felt very strongly that he wanted that on the show. I'm very lucky that I'm the kind of... the conduit for that. But he just wanted the representation, man. And it definitely allowed me to go on that platform, you know, and kind of do all the things. Everything that followed is because of that.
That's awesome. I really love The Daily Show, and I really one thing I love about it is that Trevor and yourself, a lot of people on that are not American. And you guys are talking about American politics. To me, it's just like, it's a great way to just say, look, we have nothing really vested into this government, but we're going to talk shit about it because it's so ridiculous. And it's going to be somewhat objective. Right. I just find it incredibly refreshing. I love it.
Right. Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, we try to, I mean, that was the idea, bring the outside perspective. And hopefully it's viewing it a bit more objectively with perspective. Right. Sorry, like, because I feel like, you know, you two seem like pretty international guys as well. So we kind of, we see things in Australia, we see things in South Korea, plus other parts of the world, you know, and then we see things in America. And sometimes it's like, damn, America is like so good. It's like at the elite level with so many things, you know, innovation and entertainment and culture and you know, all these arts and sciences. And then it's so weird. Like sometimes you're like, what? You guys don't have a train from LAX to the city? Like what?
Yeah.
Or how does Japan have like bullet trains for like the last 50 years? And well, America doesn't have like one bullet train in the whole country, or, you know, like, you know, so it's interesting. And it's not from like a, look, sometimes it's from a like a dissing point of view, but also a lot of times it's not. A lot of times it's from like, damn, you know, there's all these really cool ideas that could be done in America. And it's so weird that they don't, that's just not how they do it, you know, like healthcare, how they approach healthcare. Right. How they approach even this, you know, coronavirus testing, you know, how they approach that kind of stuff. Like, it's interesting. Yeah.
Right. It's exhausting living here. I'm proud to be American, but as of late, it's been pretty exhausting.
Yeah. You know, like you come down to Australia, which is kind of, you know, Western democracy. I think Americans who have no problem kind of identifying with kind of Australian culture, you know, because it's both like Western worlds, right? But in Australia, it's like, they kind of take care of people. They have healthcare. They have essentially free healthcare, essentially free education. And then you go like, well, they managed to figure this out. But in America, it becomes this weird political fight about solutions, you know, as opposed to just solutions. It's always
let's argue about it.
Let's argue about the politics of it, as opposed to, wait, what's the most efficient way to solve this. Like,
right.
So that's always kind of weird in America, I think. Especially if you come from Singapore, if you come from South Korea, even Australia.
Yeah.
You know.
Today, outside, I feel like we could talk forever about politics and life, but the purpose of today's quote-unquote meeting/podcast is to decide if we commit or quit on a movie that you have selected for us. And for people who are joining us for the first time, do know that we have spoilers in this discussion because we have to discuss the movie and determine if we love it or if we hate it. And today's movie is a classic. It is a classic.
If you guys hate this movie, then man, I don't even know what I like.
Wow.
Yeah. If anyone hates this movie, it's like you're like a race traitor.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I feel like I'm going to be bullied a certain way into my decision making. All right,
let's have thoughtful discussion. I'm looking forward to this. I really am.
Sure. We're going to have some good discussions on this. Today's movie is called My Sassy Girl. In Korean, it's called Yeopki Jogin Kunyo. And it is an extremely popular South Korean rom-com directed by Kwak Jae-yong, starring Chun Ji-yeon and Cha Tae-yeon. And it was released a whopping almost 20 years ago in 2001. It is currently available to stream in the U.S. on Amazon Prime. Now,
you can even buy it on YouTube for $2.99.
You can buy it on YouTube and Google Play as well. Eddie, if you could go ahead and read us the Amazon Prime synopsis about this amazing movie.
Whoa, hang on. Make sure you're reading the Korean one, not the American remake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
yeah, for sure. I am. Okay. The Amazon Prime synopsis. Here we go. A college student becomes involved with a self-centered young woman who humiliates him at every turn in this classic romantic comedy for the ages.
Did you hear that? It's for the ages. It's for the ages. That means this is a generational, timeless movie.
Yeah,
it's classic. What it calls itself in its own description.
Whoa,
that's
I feel like you're arguing against this right now.
I'm just saying, it's like me being like, I am the voice of a generation, and Ronnie is the face of all comedians of Asian descent for life.
Oh, I see where this
is. I'm just saying, and I'm not saying it's false.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's what the synopsis says, right? So, that's all I'm saying. Before we jump into it, I mean, Ronnie, is there a reason, an overarching overview of why you picked this movie before we deep dive into this?
Yeah, because it's fucking awesome. It's fucking awesome and I thought you guys were Korean, but I guess not. I mean, I guess you guys I guess you guys are more American than Korean.
The verdict isn't out yet.
Yeah, I know, but I can read body language. wait, so I mean, this movie came out I probably watched it late. I think I watched it like maybe a year after it came out, or maybe 2 years. It kind of took 2 years to get to me just because I'm not Korean. And but I kind of heard about it, and then I finally watched it when I was in I think I was in Australia when I watched it, or maybe not. But when I watched it, it blew my mind. It was because I already love romantic comedies. I'd never seen because of my own ignorance. I'd never seen an Asian romantic comedy written with that kind of I guess Western sensibilities in the writing. And I think the writing on that movie is really tight. The jokes all work. It's universal. I mean, the whole thing's in Korean, but I'm still getting behind it. it was very heartfelt. It was super funny. It was like it was also really insightful into like Korean culture in Korea, their attitudes towards men and women, and just cultural thing like modern Korea and how people kind of merge. Like what's the social etiquette and traditions in Korea, which I was pretty clueless to be honest. I mean, it was either watching period pieces or like, this had, you know, parts where he visited his in-laws, and it kind of showed how that power dynamic is. And
It's solid. And Ronnie, I agree with you. Like, I am a big rom-com guy. I think, you know, having watched this in 2020, you know, so 19 years later, there are a lot
of— Wait, you didn't see it? You haven't seen it before?
No, I watched it for this. But my parents had told me to watch this years ago. But of course, wow. Any wreck that comes from our parents, like, I'm not going to watch that movie.
Wow.
So watching this just a couple nights ago, you know, I kept thinking to myself, this is really good. But is it like how we look at Titanic and then you show like a Gen Zer in high school Titanic and will they think it's dope? I guess that's my question.
You know, I mean, like, this is interesting because so what, when are you guys born in the 90s?
I'm born in 88. Eddie's born 90. In 1990.
Okay, because I've been talking to like younger, like Koreans, Americans in their 20s and nobody, nobody has seen this movie. And
right.
And so, but when, you know, for my age, it's like everybody freaking watched this movie. Everyone saw this right. And loved it. So there's an interesting generation gap happening here. But if you're asking me if younger people watch this and what did they see? I mean, that's a good question. I can't speak for Koreans. I'm not even sure if I can speak for Asian Americans when they see this. That's an interesting comparison. I mean, for me, it kind of has that When Harry Met Sally vibe to it. When you watch When Harry Met Sally, because you see them use like the old kind of phones, the way they, you know,
right.
The way they go about life is very early 2000s. But yeah. You get it, and you get that it's from the early 2000s. And I think the themes in it are pretty timelessly.
Yeah.
Korean. I you know, they have that K-drama, like it's everything's the whole thing set up as a joke and then it becomes like ultra dramatic suddenly, you know, and then they meet at the end. It has these really, I don't know, like K-drama themes, but in a done comedically and with kind of like Western sensibilities a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't know what I mean, you guys haven't officially shot on this movie yet, so I'm still wondering what you guys think about. Yeah. Just go for it, guys. Just go for it. I mean, no,
I think
look, you're worried about. Yeah, I mean, you're worried about Trump jokes. I mean, this is gonna probably get you more heat than.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Just say something bad about my sassy girl. Just do it, man.
No, bro, I think
I'm not trying to wreck life.
Eric, I think before we do that, do you want to give a quick like just recap to our listeners of just like what this even is? If someone's not gonna even care to watch this,
here we go. So just for people who aren't gonna watch this, who have not seen it, and if you have, I'm just gonna do a quick recap, right? So we're gonna walk you through the film, give you a couple fun facts, and then we're gonna get into this heated, I don't want to call it a debate or hate speech time, because I feel like we should approach this with love, but I don't know, there's a lot of aggression coming my way right now, so I'm a little nervous. If you see this on screen, I'm noticeably red because I'm A, laughing, and also very nervous. So here it is. So My Sassy Girl, the film is actually based on a true story. And it was a huge hit across East Asia in particularly. And the girl who is nameless in the movie is Chun Jian, who you guys may know more recently for being in My Love from Another Star, being one of the biggest A-list actresses in Korea. The main character is Kyunwoo, who is played by Cha Tae-yeon, who I believe this was his debut movie, and he went off to win, you know, Best New Actor of the Year award. And he's all across, you know, dramas, movies, variety shows, all over Korea all the time. So the quick recap of the plot to break it down.
So very successful. Background.
Both are incredibly successful.
From this movie. Okay.
Yes.
So, I mean.
Yeah. This is like an almost famous type of movie, I feel. Like, Chun Jian is larger than life, right? Like, at this point, what can we liken her to? Like, Julia Roberts or something in her prime? And then this other dude, Cha Tae-yeon. I've seen him around, but his facial expressions are A1. Super,
yes.
Super good.
So
anyways.
Right, he's very good. So, pretty much, Kyunwoo is a college student. Comes across and helps a really, really drunk girl who's passed out in the subway, who is played by Chun Jian. Again, she's nameless in this movie, so we're going to call her the girl. They just call her Kunyo, the girl. And so she ends up vomiting all over the subway, passing out. So Cha Tae-yeon, Kyunwoo, takes her to a motel to get her cleaned up and like lets her, you know, sleep there. And then he is suspected of like kidnapping this girl and like assaulting her. is taken to jail. So he has just like all these repeated accidents and mishaps that pretty much frame him as like a sexual predator slash a horrible guy, but he's actually just a dude who's just trying to help this girl. And it's through this series of events, I would say eccentric, unfortunate, hilarious incidents of him going to jail, of him trying to help this girl, all this thing, that they just kind of casually start dating. And the dating itself is probably one of the most stress-inducing dating courses abusive. I've ever seen. Abusive, psychologically traumatic relationship.
This whole description just sucks, man. This description is terrible.
Dude,
this description isn't doing justice to anything. It sounds like you're describing like a horror movie. Like every
all right, Ronnie.
Eric is really missing the cuteness and comedic sensibilities of this movie.
Yeah, it's abusive, like K drama abusive. Like, you know, when like a Korean girl will like, you know, slap her oppa or older, you know, person.
Yeah, but there's a reason behind it. She's not just doing it. It's not like a domestic violence movie.
Right.
you just described it like Ju-on or something. Like the way if someone had told me this movie the way you're describing it, I'd be like, I'm never watching this thing. So I don't know what you want, man. Just tell me what you don't like about it.
Ronnie. Can you go ahead and describe the rest of this movie for our listeners? And
go watch it. I'm not gonna. You can make anything sound like shit if you describe it in like three sentences. Like love story. The guy. Okay, if you want. Okay, so the big reveal here is that she meets this guy on the train. She vomits on him, which apparently in Korean culture is not okay, but I don't know, by American standards it's fine. And then so he kind of brings her to they're strangers, but she like faints on him, and because he's like trying to be a good guy, he doesn't want to just leave her in her own vomit on the train, so he kind of brings her to a motel room at night just to sleep it off. But he gets mistaken as like a sexual pervert, so the police come, and then he goes to jail and he tries to explain the whole situation. And then the next day the girl and the guy meet up, and she's like demanding answers from him, and then he's just explaining what happened. And then she's like a really fierce woman by any standards but in Korean culture in early 2000s, which I'm very surprised I have to explain to you guys, apparently it's very like it's kind of very unorthodox to have a Korean woman have such a strong personality. That's hence the title, My Sassy Girl. So that's also another kind of twist on the whole idea between men and women dating in Korea, anyway.
Right.
Or at least in storytelling, right? In storytelling, usually it's the other way around. Like the guy is like this super macho dude, and the woman's a bit more, I guess, submissive. But then this kind of flips that narrative. Which is also why it was so interesting as a movie. And so they start dating after that. And then she's a very demanding girlfriend. She's always asking him to do ridiculous things and like outrageous things, in fact, like which is the dating sequence you're talking about. And then it's kind of revealed that she is dealing with some stuff. That's why she's putting him through this, which is that like just before she met him, her boyfriend like passed away, and so she's been dealing with those issues.
You just gave it away.
Yeah,
it's
well,
okay.
You said spoilers.
Spoilers. Yeah, it's spoilers. Yeah, spoilers. 100%.
Spoilers, and also
I know, but like, I love that Ronnie was like, I don't want to give it away, but then he just gave away the entire thing.
Yeah, man. Well, better. Hey, I'd rather people just know that it's not just a domestic abuse movie as you were describing it.
I'm gonna have to side with Ronnie on this one. I think the way you described this, you know, and to be fair, everything up until this point has been a very light, airy, like the music is like very cheery, and it's like,
yeah, it's
cute,
cheerful,
you know?
It's not
yeah exactly, like, and
it's you know what it is, I completely was gonna say all those things, you just said them before I could say them. I was trying to make those points, so
okay,
but since you did such a good job,
that's a cop out.
You should just no, you should just do this every week, just come on the show every week, give a very straightforward kind of thing.
You but still no. haven't answered. Just reveal yourself. Reveal yourself as a race trader and tell people why you hate this movie.
A race trader.
Just tell I'm a race just tell trader. People why you, yeah, reveal
no,
yourself.
No. I'm going to reveal if I
put
commit
on
or quit
your
at
MAGA
the end
hat
of the show
and tell people yeah. why you hate this movie.
So my MAGA hat. Oh this wow. Is, my this blood is boiling.
I've never seen wow. Eric like this, to be this red and this flustered. I mean, this is oh, this gosh. The format of this show goes a little bit of an introduction. A little bit of a synopsis. Let's talk about the central themes and then we decide if we're going to commit or quit. But right now, Ronnie, to give you guys a live update, he is demanding answers. He says he will not
He's
move on
hijacking
until
the show.
He figures out if Eric likes this
oh,
or not.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't realize the format. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can talk about, I guess, yeah, what you not like or what you like or not like about.
Yeah. Eric,
Eddie,
I
what
mean,
do you like
even,
about the movie?
What do I like about it? I mean, I'm also a big rom-com guy. So, you know, again, if I can get past like the lack of technology and like the really shitty old cell phones and stuff like that, I mean, I like it. I think what was tough for me to get by was kind of like the pacing. And I read a bunch of reviews mm-hmm. leading up to this to make sure I wasn't leaving anything out.
Ronnie's face just cursed you out. Ronnie's face just shat on you.
Listen, facial expressions. The acting, fantastic. Storyline, great. But I still think it could have probably cut out like 20 minutes just in the middle where it kind of lost itself. But anyways, I mean, still a lot of heart. But I like it. I like a good rom-com. I like, you know, I like seeing these massive actors in their early stages as well.
Right. Like what about the Korean elements of it, which I had no idea about? Like, was it like, were they... Were the kind of Korean themes authentic?
Yeah. So one thing that as I watched this to my wife, which I explained earlier, she is American and white. She was like, you know, we've been watching a lot of K-dramas and Korean movies during quarantine. And she's like, what is this like these gender roles of Korean women always being so much stronger than guys? Like this one is a pretty extreme case because she like literally has this guy wrapped around her finger. But even in like, I don't know if you've seen like Itaewon Class and all these things. There are all these like guys who always play second fiddle and they're like kind of scared of the
interesting
the female lead. I don't know. And I wanted
well,
to kind of throw
be,
that in.
Well, this might be the one that started it. Yeah, that started that theme in storytelling. Because I think maybe it was like, it was so subversive to see that. I mean, I spoke to one Korean friend about it when I went to law school with. So he's kind of my age. When I first watched this, I was kind of going crazy about it. And I was like knocking on people's doors, telling them to watch it, like a like a door to door evangelist. But well, my Korean friend was like, "Yeah, you don't fully understand unless you live in Korea, like how subversive it is for a woman to treat a guy like that, especially someone who's like a little bit older or whatever it was."
Right.
You know, there's some dialogue that deals with that at the start when they're in the motel,
right?
And,
right.
And he's like, he's kind of very meekly saying like, "Hey, I looked at your driver's license or your identification and I noticed that I'm a bit older than you. So if you could address me as such."
Which is a super,
that was great.
Which is super Asian thing to, you know, that we have this naming hierarchy with age.
Right.
And so he's like, "If you don't mind, you know." And then he's like, and she's like, "Okay, whatever. Just talk. Let's just talk as equals." And then he's like, "Okay, that's also an option." And they just, I don't know. I just think it's super fun and cute, and there was a lot of heart behind it. And I don't know, maybe I like being abused by women. I don't know. Something about this this movie just kind of really like resonated with me.
Yeah.
But,
I think it was a great movie. I think there are definitely a lot of themes, like we were saying, where Chun Ji-hyun, since that role, like even in My Love from Another Star, she plays this character of a very strong female lead who's very quirky, who has a very interesting personality and does whatever she wants, but that's what works for her in these roles that she's played. Even in other things that I've seen, she's always this strong, independent woman who's beautiful, and she kind of uses that to like her advantage in certain situations. And I think this movie was really kind of like a starting point probably for a lot of storylines to show a very powerful female lead. So I think it really did set like a cultural precedent in some ways. And watching it, it was really funny because she just didn't give two shits about anything. She was just like, this is just who I am, and being unapologetically her.
But there was a reason for that.
I think just showing that at the end, they justify it and they say this is why she is this way. But for a lot of people who are watching it, they're probably like, what the heck? This lady is crazy. And to point to how conservative things were at this time, I think when this movie was made, there was not a single, like, there's not a real kiss scene, like a lovey-dovey kiss scene, you know? And there are so many times where they just go to a cop-out of like a handhold or just like a look in the eyes. It's like, I like you or I love you kind of thing. And to me, as I was watching this, like, man, this is 20 years ago. But even then, like in Korea, I still remember like public showing of affection was not acceptable. Like kissing somebody on the lips, not acceptable. Even in movies and dramas, that was a big deal, which is why even when you go back and you watch a lot of drama, you're like, wow, that is like a lame ass kiss scene. And it's probably because it hadn't been done on screen a lot. So just to show that at that time, this was probably a very, very, like you were saying, a subversive, very progressive movie in that sense. And I think when you take it in that context, it adds a lot of cultural importance and value and said a lot for that time. I think when I watched it yesterday for the first time, I watched it for the first time too. And wow. Ronnie's about to just.
What the fuck?
If Ronnie was next to me, he literally punched my face. but I had seen this everywhere. Like, I had seen the posters everywhere. There's still, you know, a lot of references made to it to this day. I just never seen it. So I'm pretty sure you brought it to the
you
table.
You still haven't said what you don't like about it.
What I did not like about it. Okay. Not saying I did not like the movie. What I did not like about it was that I felt like, and this is to credit the director, they did like multiple parts. They did like the first, the opening, the prologue, blah, blah, blah. And they have like different parts of them acting out screenplays that she wrote because her dream was to be a screenplay writer.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like one of those could just be taken out where it's right. just, I get it, like...
Oh my God. Right now we're talking about editing. We're talking about editing. We're talking about the greatest Korean movie of all time. And you're like talking about editing. Look.
I just felt.
No, you're not necessarily wrong. Like I actually kind of agree with that. That was actually interesting insight about how conservative that time was. And I didn't even notice there was no kissing in it. They hit it really well because there's times when he asks her to kiss and then she like slaps him or something comes and interrupts it, which is like a really comedic way to stop. Like, I think it's a creative way if they're trying to not show public displays of affection. There was a kind of creative comedic way to stop that from happening while still not making it feel like this was a weird stiff movie where it felt very authentic. Those moments felt very authentic. They didn't feel too contrived, is what I'm trying to say. Although obviously they're comedically contrived, but the emotional part of it wasn't contrived, I think. But it's interesting that you're saying, like, I actually agree with the editing part. I mean, you know, with editing, you can look, I mean, at the Daily Show, I learned that we doing field pieces, like, you when it comes to editing films and short movies and whatever, it's like you gotta kill your babies, you know. I'm not sure if music's like that, but there's a lot of times when you're like, ah, damn, I really like this scene or this joke. Yeah. It's like, you got to be ready to kill your baby. So, yeah, I can see that it could benefit from it, from maybe shortening it 20 minutes. And those screenplay scenes you said are probably perfect for cutting out. But I feel like it's one of those things where the whole movie is good. And you can talk about like, cutting that scene or cutting this scene, but to go, I didn't like it because of that. For me, it doesn't track.
Right.
Like, to not like the whole movie because of these little, I just feel like you're kind of picking at it and you're just looking for reasons to not like it. I don't know really what's bugging you. Maybe it's a strong female leads or maybe the fact that it's like Korean Americans got behind it before they got behind you.
Yeah.
Or,
reminiscent of a past relationship or something like that.
Yeah, maybe it's bringing up some memories or...
I'm right. I'm right there with
maybe
you.
You're it's all Trump supporter, or I don't know what it is. I'm trying to figure it out. But
Oh my god. Ronnie is just triggering me in all the right ways. I'm about to just explode over here. Ooh.
Hey, I mean, I guess people who, you know, MAGA people don't like this movie either. So, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Eric, I agree. If that's the only bone you have to pick about it, then that's definitely not a reason to not commit to it. But I mean, I said that too. It's like the 20 minutes there, it could have been gone, but it seems like Ronnie is very forgiving because it touched on the heartstrings at a time in 2003 when he just had no idea movies like this existed. So, I mean, you know, I get it.
It's not even watching it just because it's culturally significant. Watching it, I don't know. I watched the whole thing. I'm like, man, this is fun. This movie's fun. The dialogue's fun. The interactions are fun. And some stuff is like, what? What's going on? Like, it's kind of weird and quirky. And granted, maybe some of the… It's weird because the pacing will go from like comedic to action to suddenly it's like a K-drama. And then, you know, it gets really dramatic. So I agree. It can, I guess… But maybe because I like all those genres… So I got behind it. I got behind what this guy was trying to do. You know, like, you're making only one movie. Well, guess what? I'm going to make every single movie I ever liked. I'm going to put it in there. You know, like,
I'm going to cram five of them into one.
Yeah. Like, I like Korean martial arts period pieces. Uh-huh. So there's like a scene with that. I like modern action. I'm going to put that scene in there. And I'm going to put, you know, like, it just felt like someone who was like, you know what? I got nothing to lose. And if I make one movie ever, this is it. I'm just going to put everything into it. And it you can't deny the results. Like, it blew up. The objective results, you know?
It is true.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I have a question. Ronnie, how much K-drama, how many K-movies have you seen since this? Are you an avid watcher? Like, what is your experience? Like, what do you have to compare this to? This is obviously one of those legendary type of films for you, but have you seen a lot of things after that?
I was watching more J dramas than K dramas. I think, yeah, because the J dramas had like these interesting the ones I was watching were like all like sports based. There was like a baseball one. I think it was called H1 or something. So I was watching a lot of these J dramas with like a gimmick, you know. I wasn't watching the. So in Singapore, the K dramas were becoming really popular because they were like super sad. I think it was Winter Sonata. What was that one again?
Winter Sonata.
Yeah, Winter
There's
Sonata.
Like fall, autumn, something, winter, something. There's a something for every season.
Yeah, yeah, it's like super sad, and I just I just don't like sad stories. So I wasn't watching a lot of the popular K-dramas at the time because they were all super dramatic and sad. So yeah, no, I didn't. But this was my introduction to like Korean storytelling.
So since then, have you seen like Itaewon Class or any of these, like, have you seen My Love from Another Star from Chun Ji-yeon?
No, I haven't. No, I didn't. I was trying to and I just couldn't get around to like, it was too hot to like torrent it. And then it just kind of passed me by. But at the time…
Come on, Ronnie. Yeah. You're doing great. Get a DSP login and just watch it. And then we'll like rediscuss. Because if you love this movie, then you're gonna love My Love from Another Star.
Sure.
Which is
you're gonna love it.
This is the OG though. This is the one that started
this
all
is
of
the OG. This is very true.
So why don't you talk about what you like about it instead of just shitting on things like
I just want to say I haven't shit on this movie yet. I literally just said
keyword yet.
Then just talk about what you like about it. Then people trying to make stuff. Other people just being haters, man.
What did I like about it? I feel so bullied right now, and I like it. I appreciate it.
I like this balance here. You know, it's like the moment where like, let's talk about the synopsis. And Eric, you weren't giving that amount of enthusiasm that Ronnie was expecting. He was like, hell no.
I'll be damned if your Korean American fans watch this and not watch this movie. You gotta watch this movie. You gotta watch it. It's required viewing.
No, you know what? I appreciate you having brought this movie because it forced me to watch it. I think it's a good movie and it's solid because it when you watch it, it's like, oh, this is the base for so much of the success of modern day Korean cinema and dramas. And it provides a lot of context for that. And I think for people who, like the majority of the listeners for this podcast who were maybe under the age of 20, it may be difficult for them to relate to because it was probably created in the year that they were born. So,
I didn't realize so, that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the part of the thing is like, when you take it for what it is, like for me, I think it's the perfect kind of in the background kind of thing as you may be having a drink or just kind of stuff. Ronnie's going to flip a shit right now. But, and I say that because for my purposes, right, of the 20 minutes that could be cut out, right, that was exactly when I started getting lost. Because for people who grew up with cell phones, who grew up with internet, who grew up with Facebook, it's like, wait, why can't they just call them or whatever? And it's like, oh, right. During this time, Ronnie actually just died. He's not moving on screen. He has died. They can't call people. They can't reach out to people. And so it requires people to understand the cultural context of when this movie was created, which right. if you have the patience and if you
what
have
the, fuck?
The ability, that's great. That,
what do you watch The Godfather and you're like, hey, how come they don't just launch nuclear missiles at the other family and just kill them? Oh, because this is the
because
1930s.
They don't have access to nuclear shit.
What are we talking about? You don't let my sassy go because people watch and go, why are the phones so old?
Look,
why can't he just FaceTime
I'm not
her?
Saying I don't like it. I'm
that
saying
is the worst excuse I've ever heard to not like my sassy
yeah.
girl. Did you hear
no,
that?
We had.
He just
I'm
said,
not
Eric,
saying I don't like
girl.
It.
Is like, oh, they'll watch it and they won't get why these two people can't
look,
just
look, Ronnie's
FaceTime.
Sitting here. Is your wife there? Is your wife next to you? Who's next to you?
No, this is okay. I mean, look, what the? So what? Dude, none of your fans can watch anything before iPhones. Is that what we're talking about here?
They look at they watch Star Wars, then just start throwing up. They're just disgusted.
Essentially,
Indiana right, Jones. Right.
Guys,
no, yeah.
Oh my.
Okay, I'm not
like
look.
Okay, this is like the Harry. Were your fans like when Harry met Sally?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well,
I don't
if
think
you can watch
I think,
when Harry met Sally.
Yeah.
I think you can enjoy this movie no matter when you were born. I think when it comes, however, when it comes to relating to a movie or a piece of work, right? Like, I feel like Ronnie's so skeptical. Ronnie's gonna like throw up on my face right now. But
Eric, complete your thought.
On.
You're
I,
onto something.
How should I phrase
you're
this?
Onto something.
I think for somebody to fully enjoy a movie, right, or a piece, it has to be relatable in some sense, right? Even when it comes to music or stand-up, if I've lived what you've lived or I can understand what you're going through, it's much more relatable and I can vibe with that. I think when it comes to the purposes…
You're right. You have to have superpowers in order to watch the Avengers. Yeah.
Like but here's the thing. Superpowers
you watch Titanic,
is like
you watch Titanic and go, why aren't the helicopters just coming down and just saving these people?
All right, fine.
No.
I lose.
Eric.
I'm not saying this
Eric,
is a bad film. I'm not saying this is a bad film. I'm not saying that this is not worth watching. I think just for myself, right? There were moments where I was like, okay, definitely could pick it up. I definitely like the characters. I like the screenplay. I like the wittiness. And this kind of like a smart aleck nature of everything that goes on with this movie, right?
Sure.
I had a personal hard time sitting down and watching 123 minutes of this.
It was
from
it was
start
long.
To beginning.
It was long.
That
was
my
hours.
Issue. And as I try to pull apart, where am I having the issue? That's where I can relate it to.
It was those montages. But again, it sounds like it's something that you would still enjoy despite the lack of editing. But I agree. You know, Ronnie, we had a conversation about this a couple of episodes ago in regards to like how romantic and relatable writing letters were to one another. You know, like at the end where they like put the little letter in the box and they bury it. Yeah. Like I love that. That really tugs at my heartstrings because I was a guy in kindergarten writing letters to my girlfriend at the time. You know, slipping in her locker, whatever.
Could your normal guy who likes love stories, which apparently exactly. Eric, the love but, song singer, can't get behind.
What I'll say to Eric's point, the generation right now, and we have a vast listenership of people in college and below. This is like, isn't this like Gen Z, younger millennials that like have to have Quibi as a platform because they can't watch like a 30-minute, 1-hour long series and they need it to be abridged? You know, like everything needs to be like way more like boom, 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 rather than like, oh, there's character development. Oh, like there are kids right now, younger kids that cannot do Game of Thrones because they can't, they just can't get through the first three episodes.
If you're the kind of person who doesn't have the attention span for character development, then yeah, nothing you watch will be good. It's like, it's just like with stand-up comedy. If you don't have the, if you want like a freaking meme, if you want like, you know, if you want like a one JPEG meme with a joke and you're like, this made me laugh really quick and super hard, why would I watch a stand-up special? Then yeah, I guess, I mean,
right.
then you can.
So Eric, I think you need to clarify your thoughts here, okay? I think that you mean to say that for the purposes of the show, right? Maybe some of the listeners may not have the attention span for it, which again, I can also agree.
Just shitting on the listeners. Look, guys, I mean, the bottom line is these guys clearly don't want to put themselves out there to get behind. I get behind Korean culture. I get behind what the director was doing. I love creators. Yeah. If you're out there making stuff, I'm down for you. Watch this movie. If you don't have the attention span for it, then whatever. Nothing can help you. You can't make people like have patience watch a good movie. It's like trying to justify The Godfather. Like,
right.
What? Like you don't want to watch The Godfather, then what? Like you're just not at the point in your life where you can enjoy that form of creative expression. But
I think this is a good
intellectually not developed enough to enjoy certain things. I'm just I'm a simpleton, okay? I'm a simpleton. I like simple things. And maybe I'm just not sophisticated.
You know what it is, Ronnie? I'm gonna just put it right down to what this is. I can pinpoint exactly what this is. You know, Eric is a guy who's doing a million different things at once. And so he doesn't have the patience for even those little montages, just like, I can't deal with this. So anyways, now that we've identified…
I regret everything.
So…
Go ahead.
Anyways, where do we go from here? Should we just go ahead and…
Not much
decide?
You can go from here. I mean, if we hate art and we hate we hate storytellers and we hate love stories, well… Just go look at Instagram and you know, just go scroll through Instagram. There's really nowhere to go from here. Then you go on Instagram and scroll through it and find a meme you like, and then I don't know, pat yourself on the back. If you enjoy love and culture and Asians and Koreans and cinematic.
If you love Asians and Koreans, if you love Asian people, you might love this movie. God.
If you love love and character development and happy endings and you like the good with the bad and the light and the dark, the shade, the sweet and the sour.
Oh my god!
You can take that emotional journey and you have the patience to not look at your fucking phone for, I don't know, an hour, 23
2 hours.
Minutes.
No, it's 2 hours. It's two hours.
And
you said hour 23, so if you take the 30 minutes out, I think Eric would be in.
Sure.
I would be totally in for an hour and 20 minutes.
Just watch a bit of cinematic history of a Korean movie that started the entire Korean cinema revolution that… without which we wouldn't have Parasite or Eric Nam or BTS or…
okay. So,
all right.
So,
well, Professor Ronnie Chang has given his testimony. I guess
he
Eddie
has equity in this. Like, we gotta look through the credits. Like, I'm pretty sure he's gonna be like a producer in the line here.
I think you get back end residual income from this, don't you? I'm convinced you do.
I'm just a fan.
That's great. Commit or quit.
Oh man,
Korean culture. I'm a fan of Korean culture, Korean movies. Yeah.
All right. That's typically great. At the end of the show, we ask our guests to give a reason as to why they should watch the movie they provided. I'm not going to ask you. I don't need to ask you. You've already done that. you've hijacked the time to just propagate your agenda of my sassy girl. So I'm this not was gonna
never, this was never commit or quit. It was commit or quit. Commit. That's what that's
commit
it.
Or commit. That's commit or that's commit. It. I mean, I Eddie, what die. Do you commit? Commit or be assassinated? Eddie, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna commit or be assassinated?
No, this is crazy. This is the first. This is the first time that my hands have been sweaty as we've been, you know, recording a commit or quit episode. Just because it's so heated, I love it. You know, this is great. You bring up great points, Ronnie, and for that reason, and genuine, and because I don't want to die, and I'm about to start a family soon, I'm gonna have to commit.
Congratulations.
But realistically, it is one of those legendary movies. Like, I think when I think of Old Boy and all of the twisted kind of thriller horror movies that come out of Korea afterwards, like, it was like that was the start, you know? So My Sassy Girl, I think, was maybe the tip of the iceberg that really just got all of these like romantic comedies going. And Chun Ji-eun, like, she crushed it. And then she like exploded off My Love from Another Star, which, by the way, Ronnie, that is your homework. I know you're a busy guy, but you're going to love it if you love this. And so, yeah, it's a commit for me. It's a commit for me. You have to watch it.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's just wrap up the show now. We're going to just…
Eric, come on. Give it to us. Like, is this a commit or a quit? Give us your best.
Look. For fear of ruining a friendship, a new budding friendship that I'm just terrified, I'm going to commit. I'm going to commit because I've already watched it. I've already watched it, guys. So I'm already committed. Now, I will do a caveat because, you know, for people who have a horrible attention span, who like things just kind of shoot through it, it's going to be hard
Hot
for
pockets.
You, right? I have a really bad attention span. But having said that, I appreciated the movie for what it was. I think it is a very culturally important and historically important movie. And I think that it is like a time travel movie where you kind of go back and you're like, oh, this is life in the early 2000s in
Korea.
The
soju bottles. The soju bottles.
The soju bottles, the little cell phones, the subway, just everything about it. There are scenes in this movie where I'm watching, it's like, oh, this is this location that I pass by every day. It looked completely different 20 years ago, obviously. But there are a lot of cultural things where you're watching it and it's like walking into a time capsule. And for that, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And I love the story itself. Could there be 20 minutes less? Absolutely. But that's the beauty of cinema 20 years ago. They took their time because people had longer attention spans. So,
that's right.
For what it is, I commit to it.
It's safe.
oh my God, I'm sweating so much. Anyways.
You did. That was really well said, Eric. I think you nailed it. That was really well
done.
But
I did have to provide, the honest feedback. And for fear of Ronnie getting on a plane, flying to Korea, doing 2 weeks of quarantine just so he could stab me in the back. I did think of that, but I'm going to commit to it. So there you go. That's what we have for Commit or Quits, My Sassy Girl. Ronnie, thank you for bringing this movie and such heated debate. I've never been so on edge and nervous during a discussion before, but I'm glad that this happened. And I think your law school training really gave you a legs up when it comes to bullying regarding a movie in a certain way.
Oh, absolutely. And, happy to be on. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Before
yeah.
He doesn't even acknowledge that. Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. Love Korean culture. I, for one, have always been a fan of My Sassy Girl. And if you're Korean, I think you should probably get behind me. Sounds like one of us in this chat is really representing the culture properly.
Before we let you go, we have some questions from fans that we want to ask you on their behalf. This is from Crying Fox Sushi. Has there ever been a joke or a bit that you were nervous or scared to use because you're terrified of the reaction?
It's a very complicated question. I mean, I guess I'm... Yeah, or trying new material is always kind of scary. So any new joke, which I'm trying to figure out, like, so the process is usually you write new jokes and then you
you go to open mic rooms or comedy rooms and you mm-hmm. just try work it out, right? So that process is usually pretty like nerve-wracking in itself, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then
is there one bit in particular, like one that you remember being like, oh, this is
nah, mad. I mean, it's very hard to explain the process because every living second I'm thinking of jokes. So it's like, there's no one thing. It's so every day there's sure. something and you're always trying to push the edge. So everything can get kind of edgy sometimes. And yeah, there's times when I got to ask my wife like, oh, is this okay? Or is it okay to say this? But you kind of learn by just doing it, right? You do it on stage and mm-hmm. you get the actual feedback from people. And mm-hmm. I tour around just like you do around America and around the world. So
yeah.
you do enough times, you get a good handle on like, does this work? That is it worth doing? Are people laughing for the right reasons? You know, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, to answer the question, I think almost every joke I do has that feel to it, at least at the start, right?
Uh huh. And yeah. I guess in my head, it's like you go to the extreme and then you start paring back, you start cutting back. It's like, okay, how do we make this acceptable or like relatable?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Depends
that's
on what's
probably
going on.
How I think of it. Yeah.
Right, yeah. But I mean that sometimes when the whole point is to be edgy, you know? Some jokes the point is to cross the line and just
yeah.
you know. So I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Cool. But if you watch my special and you tell me what you think is probably more edgy, maybe that was probably one of the jokes which I might have been worried about. Yeah.
There you
Dude, sorry, I wish I could answer her better, but I or him or it's her better, but I, yeah.
Eddie, what were you gonna say?
No, I was just gonna come back and say how much I enjoyed that special. I mean, even like the Amazon bit and just how you know. Okay, whoever hasn't watched this show and is checking out this podcast, do yourself a favor and watch this stand up. You're gonna really, really enjoy it.
I wonder what Eric says about this on another podcast. If he's commit or quit on my special. Well, you know 20 what? Minutes.
That's the next episode.
It's just gonna be a bonus episode.
Yeah. I just don't think 2019. I mean, what was going on then? We just can't relate to like, people
this
using
pre-corona
Amazon.
Pre-corona times.
Like, yeah. Pre-corona.
Pre-corona times.
I just think that to watch something, you need to have lived it.
Oh my gosh.
I have a question. Do you see yourself ever doing like a live stream stand-up? I know like a lot of musicians, even including Eric, doing it. You just need that. Do you need that reciprocity?
You
from
need
the audience?
Energy. You need audience.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Stand-up comedy requires a live audience. Yeah. So Zoom comedy is just, I've been avoiding doing it. I'm going to try to avoid doing it as long as I can.
Because you can have like up to like what, 200 people or something? Technically,
yeah,
if you had them in a Zoom.
Like comedy needs the instant feedback. Like you can't do it with a delay or like a, it's just not optimal. It's
you
not
have to
the
read the room.
Yeah,
you gotta read
it's
the
not
room.
It's not. It's not the same. I'm trying to avoid doing it as long as possible. So hopefully the world doesn't end before I have to, you know.
That'd be great.
Drive room. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get through it. But anyways, Ronnie, I know you're a busy guy. Thank you so much for making time and joining us on Commit or Quit. I really appreciated you being a bully. And I hope that you can join us again at some point and just really ram another movie down our throats. Because I think it would be a lot of fun. So
I've never seen somebody just take this and say, you're going to like it. You're gonna like it.
I thought I chose the movie that you guys would get behind. I didn't want to pick something else, and apparently, I'm the only guy who likes My Sassy Girl. No. The fuck, everyone.
No, we liked it. We committed. There are three commits.
We loved it.
Loved it.
Good. It's a great movie. I would love.
I think it would be like Ronnie. You would give this thing close to like a 98% to 100%, right, on Rotten Tomatoes.
Sure.
Sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think for me, I'd give it like an 85. And it sounds like Eric would probably give it like a 74.
No. I'd give it a 90. So, whoa. Eddie, it's on you. Eddie, you're horrible.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm giving you 85.
You're just a horrible guy.
Yeah, 85 is really good. 85 is really good in my book.
All right.
So,
all right.
Well, any Koreans watching this, I gave it 100. So just know who who's the real ambassador of Korea
culture.
Dude,
where can we find
you? Just trying to take over Korea right now.
Where can we find
you? What's coming up for you? What's coming up for you next? Like, what do you got working?
No. Okay. Just follow me at Ronnie Chang, whatever. Hopefully, I'll see you guys on the road in America in 2021. For real, I just postponed my live tour to 2021. So,
we just saw.
Yeah, check out the shows in 2021.
Well, I'll be there with a hazmat suit and a mask on. So, I'll see you there. But thanks again for making time. Really great catching up with you. And as always, more than welcome back anytime to just fight. I'd love to just fight, verbally argue with you. I know I lose, but I like to think that I'm improving myself.
Hey, no, thanks for having me on. Really great to meet you guys. Loved your concert. I'm a huge fan of your
music
now. I think your show probably could have cut like 20 minutes out of it. But I mean, that's just because I have a low attention span. I couldn't really relate to like the sexy guys dancing on stage. Like, I couldn't relate to shirtless muscle men on stage. So I'm a bit like, I don't know where I fit into this, but... hey, you know, like,
I regret everything. I regret it all.
I've just been watching this whole podcast episode unfold, how it was just like mutual respect. And I was like, hey, man, I loved your concert. He's like, no, you're dope, man. You're the funniest guy I know. Oh, you're the best singer I know. And then just like crumbling to pieces. I love it.
Eric's awesome. I love what you've been doing. My wife and her friends all love you. And they're sharing your clips around. And
Please
they're talking behind
our
back right now. They can't believe I'm on the podcast with you. They keep messaging each other. They keep messaging me on my phone. Like, are you talking to Eric now? I'm like, yeah. He hates my sassy girl.
He can't be trusted. He's an enemy. Yeah.
But yeah, you're the best, man.
Well,
thanks for having
me
on. Good, you guys. Take care. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much. Likewise. And hopefully we'll connect sooner than later.
Yeah, we'll do. See you, Eddie.
Sounds good, bro. All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Oh man. So that was it. That was our episode with Ronnie Chang. Hope you guys enjoyed it as we discussed My Sassy Girl. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel. I felt I was pressured. I was bullied. How did you feel, Eddie?
Eric, tell us, like, did you really commit to it? Or would you have liked to quit should he have not applied that type of pressure?
Let's be honest. If he wasn't so adamant, if this was one of his favorite all-time movies, I would have broken his heart. I was just afraid that I would break his heart forever. And
wait, but for real, you would have quit?
I'm still glad I watched it. I'll say that. I'm glad I watched it. So in that sense, I will commit. But again, I think there were moments in it where I was like, I'm getting tired. Mm-hmm. Right? So it was a commit, but it was like a very close to me being like, okay, I can't watch this anymore. So for me, that's why I was like, if I could do something as I watch it, great. Maybe if I was like on a treadmill or if I was, I don't know.
No.
I don't know. And you're still a commit?
Yeah, I'm still a commit. I mean, because it's a legend. It's a legendary.
You love stories too.
I know.
So.
I do.
But anyways, thanks everybody for tuning into this week's episode of Commit or Quit with Ronnie Chang. Please go ahead and tag us on Twitter at The Dive Studio. So let us know if you agree with us on this with the hashtag Commit or Quit.
And be sure to subscribe to Dive Studios on YouTube at youtube.com/Dive Studios. Follow us on IG at The Dive Studios. Follow us on TikTok as well, because that is currently exploding.
The future.
And please make sure to become a patron of ours at patreon.com/divestudios. You know, we mention this every week, but we do have some cool perks, full videos, opportunities to Zoom call with us, etc., etc. And most importantly, it does help the entire Dive Studios team to be pumping out podcasts to your liking.
And lastly, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss any new episodes. Leave us a nice rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. You guys have a great week. We'll see you next week on Commit or Quit.
Quit.
Bye.